This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
A little while back, as part of its desire to inspire the community before the Chagim, Mashrul organized a talk by Captain Anuska Pillay, SAA pilot, to share her professional and spiritual journey. As we enter the Yamim Noam, the 10 days of intense introspection, I cannot think of a better person to share her professional and personal journey to inspire us now. Anuska, welcome and thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, and thank you for having me. I must say, I'm really excited to be here.
I'm really excited to have you. Yes, talk to me.
No, I was going to say, in my family, there's a lot of talkers. So now I've got like 20 minutes of free talk time without them interrupting.
Okay, and I'm going to give you as much time to talk because your journey is incredibly inspirational. But let's first start off with your journey to become a pilot.
Okay. Okay, so look, this is a proper underdog story. Because for me, I grew up in Durban. I come from a single parent home. My dad, unfortunately, had an issue with drugs. So single parent home. My mom was a teacher, so definitely, as all teachers know, on a single income, the dream of me becoming a pilot was fairly, it looked impossible, right? And the other thing is, I'm 44 years old, so I grew up in apartheid South Africa. So the landscape looked a bit different. It is changing now, but it's taken a very long time to get here. So proper underdog story. I had to find a way to pay for my flying.
So, and it's not cheap. Out of all the things in the world, flying lessons particularly are expensive.
That's very expensive. You're basically looking at selling your kidney. Don't do it. So what actually happened was my mom pulled me by my ear, like after I finished school, and because I wasn't interested in studying anything else, I knew always that I wanted to fly. Huh. How? I can't really tell you that. It's just a crazy thing when you know, and that's it. So I always knew I was going to fly, and a lot of people ask me the question as to how, and I had no clue. I just knew I was going to get there. But you can imagine, I mean, it was high school, very determined, very stubborn, had no idea how to do it. And then eventually I got into...
Wait, your mom pulled you by the ear and said...
She literally pulled me by the ear and she said, this is a really stupid idea. But if you want to pursue a stupid idea, that's fine. You're just going to have to find a way to finance it yourself. And like every good Indian mom, she pulled me by my ear and said, but first you have to study something, because that is not a degree, it's a license. So I had to study first, and it was option B to pay for option A, so I started studying some engineering. But by like year three, SAA, South African Airways, thank God, they had a bursary program. And so that was my way in. So, and that's how I started flying. I got chosen, thankfully, and that's how I started flying. And then it was a long journey, lots of flying to get into SAA. It took me about 7 years, and I've been with them now like about almost 16 years, 15 wow. and a half years.
You're a captain.
Yes.
And you often are the one heading all female flights across the country and across the world, kind of to represent women's empowerment and growth.
Yes.
And how does that feel?
Can I be honest?
Yes.
Look, flying is amazing. But should we not also be looking at the perspective? And I know it's slightly different. Because I don't care who I fly with, if that makes sense. And that is the place in the world that we should get to. Because I think everybody is in a place where everyone's capable. So, respective of color or race, which is, you know, there's a huge focus of that in this country, unfortunately. And we need to move away from that. So whether male, female, different colors, different whatever you want to call yourself, I think we need to get to a place where you're there because you love doing what you want to do and you're good at it.
And I suppose there's very small room for mistakes when you're a pilot. So truly, yeah. You have to be really good because you have so many lives on your hands that there's no real...
100%. So the thing with flying is that there's no room for error. There's very small margins, and then we train all the time. So it really is dependent on like how much of effort you put into it, and obviously there's skill and then how much of effort you put into it.
And just having known that you wanted to fly all your life.
Yeah.
Are you living the dream?
100% yes.
Yes. Every time you get into your uniform and every time you get behind the cockpit.
Okay, I can't say every single time because I'm going to explain this. Okay, because at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you're not a morning person, right, that's not the greatest time to be awake, right? So sometimes I wake up grumpy and I have days where my coffee needs a coffee. So like 5 coffees down the line because I woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, but once I'm in that aircraft, 100%, because we see incredible things. And we do. We experience incredible things. You can fly to a place 4 times in a day, for example. And it can be the same place, but every single time will be different. So something will be different, whether it's the weather, it's the traffic, the person you're flying with. There's so many variables that makes it really exciting and very challenging. But on the flip side, it's also incredibly beautiful. Like, I've seen meteor showers. I'm sure you've seen, for example, like Mauritius from the air, right? It's islands, but every single time I go there,
you get a thrill.
It's a thrill. It's thrilling because firstly you get to land there, which is the thrill in itself, and then when you take off, you see this incredible beauty. A couple of days ago, I saw a moon that was quite unusual, and we get to see so many different things. Like every flight is different. So yeah, am I living the dream? Yeah, 100%.
So yeah, I can imagine because I've been traveling, and I'm sure you've gone around the world. Favorite places?
I have to say, as the world's a big place, so as many places I've been to, there's always more to go to.
Right. Do you have a destination that's on your bucket list?
Galapagos Islands. I would like to do some scuba diving there. That would be amazing. do I have a favorite place to fly to? Pretty much everywhere, but one of my favorite cities is Hong Kong, and it's Hong Kong's a very special place for me because that's also how my conversion started.
Okay, taking us straight into it. You flew to Hong Kong.
Basically, yeah. So my flying... My flying story is... it's basically entwined with my conversion because I was on a flight to Hong Kong where I was part of the crew. And... I walked into a shul. I have to say, not by myself. And it is quite a long story, but I'm going to give you the highlights, obviously, high-level stuff. And at that time, I was dating someone. It happened to be Jewish, and we followed a guy. And this is one of the biggest mischiefs I think there is we followed a guy. We never saw his face. He had a yarmulke on, and we followed him down the street. And the person I was with said, "Would you like to see, like, what an Orthodox shul is?" And I said, "Yes, of course," because I never say no to things. Now, just a bit of background of that. If someone said to me a few years ago that I'd be religious, yeah, I would have laughed, right? So the thing is, I grew up in a home that was both Christian and also Hindu, and nothing was a fit. So as a kid already, I knew this was an uncomfortable space. It's not for me. But you know, life moves on. So I would say I was spiritual. I believed there was a God, I prayed, but there was no connection through a religion, right? So it was really interesting because we followed him in, and it was a Orthodox Sephardic shul in Hong Kong. And one day I would like to go back there because I have to say thank you. And I walked in, didn't know how to, obviously I got introduced to a siddur, I didn't know how that even worked. So I just sat down, I went and sat in my corner, and the service continued, and it was in Hebrew, obviously, and I had no idea what was happening, but I have to tell you, at some point in there, I felt like I went home. So it's a very weird feeling, but a very comforting one, if that makes sense. So it's more like intuition. So I felt like I literally went somewhere and I transported myself somewhere else, and it felt like it was home. But that's a feeling, right? And now everybody at some point in their life might have that feeling for something or the other. It's that spark. It's like when you meet someone and it's a kindred spirit, or your loved one that you met for the first time, or it could be anything, like a connection with a place. That's what that felt like. That's the most I can describe it as. So leading from that, because I'm a logical person, what actually happened was I came back home, and then I did a bit more research, and then I tried to literally break into the Northcliffe Shul, because that's where I live. And it took a while. It took a couple of months. Actually, just prior to that, my mom and I took a month-long holiday. And what I did was I picked up like an electronic version of the Chumash.
Okay.
And I started reading it. Okay, in English, obviously. Yeah. I mean, my Hebrew now is as terrible as it was back then. And so I started reading it, and then I felt like there was something there. And that's why I tried to break into the shul, and eventually I did. And I met some very grumpy old people that said, "What are you doing here?" And by the way, I have to tell you, I went in my tackies, my jeans, drove my car. It was in Shabbat. This was after submitting everything but my blood type to them just to get into the shul, yes. Right? Anyway, I get there and I meet all these grumpy people. Grumpy, lovely people. I do love them to bits, I have to tell you.
I know exactly what you mean. And so does our community, yes. No need to justify or defend.
And they were like, "Why are you here? What's wrong with you?" "No, you don't want to be Jewish. Half the time people are trying to kill us." So that's literally what they said to me the first time. I was like, "Okay, just chill out. I'm just here to check it out." And what actually started happening is I started going every Friday night and Saturday morning. But the Saturday morning is what got me, because every single time that they did like a Torah reading, I was wondering if they were reading what I was reading, like if they were seeing what I was seeing. Because for the first time, I think all the questions that I had as a kid, and I don't want to debase any other religion, so I won't do that. But the questions, the many questions that I had, were actually like I was finding not just answers, but more questions. Mm. So and that's the thing that I find with Judaism. It's like questions lead you to another question, which but the whole time, it's just amazing and it's just positive. So a short answer is I kind of fell in love with the Torah. It's corny, but it's true. And then the like into the CSO like months later, like almost a year later. But by then, like things started progressing where I started stop wearing jeans. I was like, okay, let me try this. They say don't eat shellfish. So I stopped eating shellfish. Slowly, slowly, right? Yeah, and then the CSO came in and they were like, "Okay, but you're not Jewish. What are you doing here?" And they were like, "No, if you want to come, you're going to actually have to join this conversion program." So I was like, this is a big decision, right? And that's what happened. So and then enter the conversion program, and that's how it all started.
So Anuska to Aviva, where are you now? You are fully converted?
Yes.
Yeah. And a member of the community?
Yes, I'm almost 4 years old.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm going to now call you Akiva. Aviva.
Sure.
Aviva, when I met you, mm-hmm. and it was actually hosting you for spirituality, it was actually before Shavuot.
Okay.
And it was your personal journey connected to Shavuot. We are going into the High Holy Days.
Yes.
And I just wondered your thinking and your message to our community at a time like this when there's excitement but also anxiety because the war in Israel is now entering its second year. And I think there's a lot of mixed feelings out there.
Sure. Okay. I'm going to share a couple of stories if that's okay.
So long as you've got 4 minutes, that's fine.
It's a quick one. Okay, then I'll share the story of this. When I was going through this program, one of the things that I got to do was participate in a seminary, online seminary in Neve in Israel, right? And it was during COVID. And it was a tough time because as a pilot, wasn't flying, wasn't getting paid, was going through a heartbreak. And my heart was breaking, all right? And this is every person's story, right? And then I came across this shiurim that I'll share. It was a rabbi's take on how do you see the Torah? Right, and he said there's three different types of people. There are the people that see the Torah where it's like a recommended guideline, right? So they'll touch it when they want to touch it. And so that's like once a year Yom Kippur Jor. They know that's a no-no, can't work, they won't come to shul, right? But the rest of the time, they're like, maybe, when it's convenient, right? And then you get the people that are very, very firm, which sees it's very strict guidelines. It's very harsh. It needs to work a certain way, and it's to the book, and that's it. And then you get these people that see it completely differently. And he said it's like Hashem wrote a love letter to the Jews. and this is the way that you can choose to see the Torah. So I was like, a love letter. This is interesting, because every love story that I know, it's not Romeo and Juliet, right? Or is Romeo and Juliet filled with heartbreak? But is that not what all love stories are? That it's filled with heartbreak, right? But if you remember something, the thing about heartbreak is this. There were two sets of tablets, right? The first set of tablets was given by Hashem and prescribed by Hashem. But Moshe broke them in order to save us. He broke them. And then there was a second set, right? But what you, I don't know if you remember or not, they carried the second set through the desert with them. Why would you carry broken pieces with you? Because the broken pieces are you, right? There's strength in breaking. There's strength in feeling fear and loneliness and everything that you feel uncomfortable with. Because once you put all those pieces together, you're actually stronger than you were before. There's even like a Japanese art form where they bind broken pieces with gold. And it's much more beautiful than when it was started.
That is an absolutely beautiful story to end this interview with. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing. And wishing you also Shana Tova Umetuka.
Okay. Shana Tova Umetuka. And I have to say, I hope it's not a turbulent ride for everyone. But just remember, if it is, put your seatbelts on and remember your bolt to break.
Thank you very much. That was Anuska Pile, or Aviva Pile, and she is captain of the SAA. She is a captain and of SAA, is that correct? Is that how you?
Yeah, definitely.
And just sharing her story. Thank you so much. Just before we go into the break, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you are having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside. Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here.